Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, whenever or wherever you are listening. Thank you for joining us. You are now rocking with the best. So do us a favor and subscribe, rate, and review. Make sure you tell a friend. We'd really appreciate it. My name is Kwame. Double Trouble is in the house. We've got Akil Thomas and Elijah Roberts. Boys, what's going on?
A lot's going on, actually. Up to a lot.
I'd say the same thing. Just, enjoying the play-ins, playing games. It's been pretty fun to watch, and a couple of buddies who've made teams now, so it's been even more interesting to watch. So, I've been having fun.
Yes, we totally got a lot to talk about, but on today's show, from the Spittin' Chiclets crew, Paul Bizanet's going to be joining us. Big shout out to the Minister of Graphic Information, Brother B, always holding us down on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. So if you get a chance, make sure you connect with us. We're under Soul on Ice, the podcast, on all social media platforms. Big shout out to Everett Fitzhugh. He's going to be joining us one day soon. He just got hired by the Seattle Kraken. He's going to be leading their broadcast team over there. I spoke to him over the weekend, and his biggest thing was this is a lifelong dream for him. So we just wanted to send him his good luck and congratulations. So boys, Stanley Cup, Toronto Maple Leafs, Columbus series, emotional roller coaster if you're a Leafs fan. And Akil, you had a teammate that is playing for the Leafs now, Nick Robertson. How do you think he did?
Yeah, I thought he did really well. Had his first goal. That was awesome. Just seeing how happy he was. He likes scoring goals, but anyone who knows him, knows he would have been so happy to score his first, especially, in the playoffs and stuff. So that was awesome. But also my boy Liam Foodie. He was actually the guy screaming Scarborough in my ear after World Juniors. So shout out to him. He scored a big goal last night, actually, to put them up 2-0, and then they ended up getting an empty netter. He actually played really well. He was like in the third period, he was getting like double shifted. So he's doing really well. I'm really proud of him and happy for him. Hopefully they can do well against Tampa, and he can play even more. So really looking forward to following Columbus. But yeah, it was a roller coaster for sure. I was watching the game with a few of my buddies who are big Leaf fans, and it was just literally a roller coaster of emotions. And that's just what playoff hockey is about. And it was so much fun to watch.
I was actually at Turtle Jack's in that one game where they were down 3-0, and the place was packed. There's people all over watching the game, and the score goes 3-0, and the place just emptied, and there was nobody in there. And before you know it, within 3 minutes, they tie the game, they win in overtime, and I think that's got to be one of the biggest comebacks in Leaf history. I can't think of anything through my time that I've seen like that. So definitely a lot of emotions, and it sucks that they couldn't get the job done, but it's in these five game series, it's kind of hard to really just it's any team's game. Ran into a hot goaltender, and that's just the way it goes.
What I found funny about that was just watching them, they pulled their goalie pretty early, and I think they pulled him with
4 minutes left.
Three minutes and something seconds left, and it was to the point where you kind of thought that the Leafs were kind of going to give up a bit. You saw them kind of playing a little bit lackadaisical, and Columbus was just firing pucks on their open net and missing. So it was just a matter of time before they scored, and then boom, they get a goal. And then all of a sudden they're let's get the puck in the zone again, see what happens. And then boom, another goal. And then I just saw a change in everyone's energy on the ice, and everyone's we're scoring. And it was just amazing. That's just what hockey's all about. So obviously Matthews ended up winning the game in overtime, and what a nice pass from Marner to Tavares to have that hockey sense to give it to Matthews. And obviously if you give him the puck right there, he's going to score 9 times out of 10. So, it was sick.
I actually stopped watching when it was 3-0. It was so weird. I was just here we go again.
I'll stick it out to the end.
I know. Usually I'm that guy. I'll watch a game to the end, but I ended up just saying, I just went, got something to eat. I flipped the channel once, and then I was texting some friends, and the Oilers were out, and their guys from Edmonton and they were talking about that. And then I said, yeah, well, the Leafs are out too. And they're like, I said, same goes for the Leafs. And then one of my buddies was just like, well, at least they're still in it. I'm like, still in what? He goes, are you not watching? And then I flipped over and I was like, I couldn't believe it. We're in overtime. And I was like, this is nuts. And yeah, it was great to see them carve that out. But, you know, unfortunately, they couldn't hold it. I think, you know, in game five, they played really well. It's just that it was just the one line that was really bringing the offense and nobody else. And I think, you know, the one thing for me has always been with the Leafs is defense. We just need defense, man. So I don't know. But Elijah, your boy, Hughes, he had a massive game as well.
He's killing it right now. He started the postseason the way he ended the regular season, and he's just so like calm, cool, and collected. And if you watch him play, it's like he like never panics. Like
no, never.
He'll make a mistake and they'll score. It happened. He made a mistake, they scored, and then he went out in his next shift, got a goal and an assist. And it's just like confidence he has. It's I've honestly never seen it from like another player. Like he's just like so calm with the puck, and he's already one of the best defensemen in the game. And I think within the next year or two, like he's going to be in the conversation for being the best. He already set the rookie record for Canucks in the playoff series, a rookie defense record. And it was only a four game series. So it kind of just shows you how dominant he is. And, you know, I'm rooting for Vancouver the rest of the way. Leafs are out, Pittsburgh's out. And, you know, it'd be nice to see him bring home a Stanley Cup.
I'm still not sold on Vancouver. They've always bothered me, that team. But Akil, you used to play. You played with Hughes a couple of times, no?
Mostly with Jack, his little brother. We were line mates for half a year. But I played with Quinn a couple of times, like with Elijah, just getting called up and stuff. So it's just like it's crazy to see. Like even just like my line mate Nick Robertson this year. You know, I've played with Foodie at World Juniors just to see them like performing against like, you know, the guys I've looked up to for so long. It's crazy. And just kind of inspires me even more, you know. So it's not seeing these guys doing so well.
So now that we're down to the playoffs, 16 teams, that means, you know, the draft lottery is done. You guys want to talk about what happened and what went down and what your thoughts are?
Yeah, I think it's obviously interesting. Last year, New York had number two, and now they have one. And Kako was a left winger. Lafreniere is a left winger as well. So it's a little bit interesting, you know, for that. But you look down the road like 4 or 5 years, what, you know, that team could potentially become with them both there. You know, maybe one can play right wing and that. So that'd be awesome. I think obviously I played with Lafreniere, so I know he'll do well anywhere he goes. He's an unreal player. So I'm excited to kind of, you know, see him make his transition.
And yeah, just to add on that, I was actually looking at New York's roster, and I don't like, I know Lafreniere is a clear cut number one this year, but they are winger heavy and they need a number one center. And there's a chance they trade down, there's a chance they don't take him, but they have Panarin, Kako, Kreider, Howden, Zibanejad, Buznevic. They're all those guys are wingers, and it's hard to get a number one center.
See, I think they trade one of those guys and get a centerman in return and then keep Lafreniere, because I think Lafreniere is like just not a player you can kind of pass on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll probably still be the pick, but I think if any of the eight teams was to not take him because of where they are right now, I think New York needs a center the most out of all those teams. So it'll be interesting. Who knows? Maybe they trade the pick. Maybe they take him. Maybe they surprise everyone and take.
Maybe they take you as a centerman. Maybe
me as a centerman. I can't be drafted anymore. Too old.
True.
They can't call me number one no more.
Can't call you number one anymore. So what about our picks? We did picks for the play-ins to the playoffs. How did you guys do? I was 3 out of 8. I'm horrible at these picks, but. You know,
Akil and I had the same picks and we went 4 for 8. So not bad. Pretty impressive.
I thought I was gonna do a little bit better though. I thought I would be like 6 or 7 out of 8.
Pittsburgh and Montreal surprised.
That surprised me.
I saw something on TSN. There was like 15 people and only one of them had like Montreal. Like, nobody had Montreal.
Right.
Out of that.
That's what you get, man, when you put that on a person's shoulders. You know, that makes them fight even harder.
Goaltending, too. Can't bet against the best goalie.
Who do you think has been the strongest so far?
Philly. They've just dominated, like, everyone. They haven't had a close game.
I didn't even watch any Philly games, but, everyone I talked to about it, they said Philly's winning the cup. So we'll have to see.
I watched them against, like, Tampa, and they, like, dominated. Like, they just – I don't know what has gone into them. They're a pretty deep team, like, defense forward. They got probably the best up-and-coming goalie. So they really surprised me and a lot of people, and I think they have a real shot to make it pretty far.
I thought Carolina played really well in their series. They looked very strong the first sweep. And I don't know. I'm seeing Carolina getting a good little run.
Me too. I think last year they had a really good run and they were playing well. They just obviously didn't end up winning, but I think it's a great year for them to kind of come back and be a little bit stronger. So, boys, who do we have for the first round playoff picks?
Elijah, you go first.
Calgary and Dallas.
Calgary and Dallas? I got Dallas.
I got Calgary. I'm not a big Flames fan this year, but, you know, I'm going with Calgary.
I'm not big on the Flames either. I mean, it's always easy to say if this happened, that happened, but Winnipeg was without Scheifele and Laine that series, and I'm not really sold on the Flames either.
What about Arizona, Colorado?
Colorado. They might make it pretty far in the West. They're a pretty solid team, defense, offense, goaltending. They're good all around.
I'm going with the Avs.
I got the Yotes there. Carolina, Boston.
Boston.
Oh, Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, originally I would have said Boston, but I got a weird feeling. Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak didn't have too much success in the round robin game, so I have a weird feeling about Carolina.
They'll be there when it matters. They know what it takes to win.
We'll see, right? We'll see. Right. Vancouver, St. Louis.
I'm sticking with Hughes. I know he's going to have a big series. The rest of the team, Patterson looked great the whole time. I don't know if you guys got to watch any Vancouver games, but I'm rolling with Vancouver.
St. Louis.
I got St. Louis as well. You know, they're hot off last year, and I don't think they're going to lose to Vancouver, to be honest. Vegas, Chicago.
I think
I got Vegas here.
Other than Philly, Chicago probably looked the best to me. They looked real good and slowing down. Well, I mean, they didn't really slow down McDavid, but handling that team who Kwame thought was going to win it all.
I know.
Handling that team the way they did is pretty impressive.
Washington Islanders.
I'm going with the Islanders.
Going with the Caps.
I'm going with Ovi and the boys for sure. I don't think he's messing around. Tampa, Columbus.
I really was stuck on this one because Tampa might be without Hedman, and they're already without Stamkos
too. Yeah,
but I think they're a deep enough team that they're still going to find a way to get.
I think Hedman will be out. It looked like he definitely sprained or snapped his ankle.
Ankles, you can never tell though. Like that
was brutal.
That could be day to day, or it could be like 6 months. Like
yeah,
it's hard to tell.
Yeah. Tampa. Yeah, I put Tampa, but I won't be surprised if that one. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Didn't Columbus just sweep some?
You know?
Jeez. Yeah. Montreal, Philly.
Philly.
Yeah, we all got Philly here, so should be interesting how that goes. Philly hasn't been, I don't think, deep in a while, so I'm looking forward to seeing them play.
It's going to be dope. It's going to be a great first round of the playoffs, and we will give you guys our takes on it as the weeks go by. It's just great that hockey is back. Brother B is going to set up our next picks, and you'll get to see how we fare out. And, you know, audience, join in, chirp us, disagree, whatever you want to do. It's all in fun, and I think it's going to be a great playoffs, to say the least. And with that, we're going to get busy like Arsenio Hall style, and come back with Paul Bissonnette. Everybody's ready? Okay, Our next guest, he was drafted 121st overall in 2003 to the Pittsburgh Penguins. In his own words, he spent most of his career in the penalty box or watching the game in the stands. But that doesn't really matter because he had a great five-year career in the show. He's been able to carve out an amazing career on and off the ice. He's got one of the biggest hockey podcasts in the world. Not one of the biggest hockey podcasts in the world. Even though he loves to rock the Speedo, don't get it twisted. The kid is not a softy. He's tough as nails. Some would like to call him nasty. Others call him Biz Nasty. Let's give a warm welcome to Paul Bizanet. What's up?
I don't mind rocking a Speedo. I like getting the quad stand up, boys. I mean, can you blame me? I like to get the whole body tanned up if I'm going to be out in the sun. So hopefully I'm not getting judged too hard on my Speedo wearing.
Well, you know what? The reason why you can get away with doing that is because hockey players are all bottom. Muscles in the bottom. If you were like a tennis player, I mean, it's not even tennis. Tennis players are the same. Let's see, who would be a flat bottom?
I look like I got injections. You know, I kind of got that little
Kardashian look.
Yeah, yeah. I got I look like an ant. Don't they put the ant emoji now?
Yes.
Looks like my diaper's full.
Biz. So, hey, man, listen, first of all, thanks for joining us on the show, man. We really appreciate your time. And congrats to you and the boys over at Spit and Chicklets and all the success. This is great. This is another way, in my opinion, to take hockey to that next level that it needs to be. First question I got for you is, who gave you the name Biz Nasty? And does that have anything to do with the hip-hop icon Biz Markie? And for all you kids out there, look him up. I'm sure, Biz, you know who Biz Markie is, right?
No one knows who that
is. Nobody knows who he is.
You
Nobody.
Got what I need.
Sing it, Biz. Sing it, Biz.
And you say he's just a friend.
And you say he's just a friend. Oh, baby. There you go. See?
Oh, God. We're going to bust everybody's ears up. It was given to me in the American Hockey League by a gentleman named Stephen Dixon. And he's from Halifax, Nova Scotia. Or maybe just outside. And it just kind of started when I started fighting in the American Hockey League. I wasn't known as much of a scrapper in junior and even in the East Coast Hockey League, but I kind of had to adapt to that role. And after one of the games, he was like, "You nasty, you bees nasty bees." And it was like everyone in the room started laughing. So from that moment forward, it kind of was a joke and I'd embraced it. And it was kind of like my alter ego / wrestling name for the fighting persona. And, you know, when I jumped on social media, I kind of just stuck with it. And, you know, it's kind of, I mean, it's a little douchey. I'm not going to lie. It's a little weird when you're 35 years old and you're like, you're cruising around with your parents, maybe in Toronto, going to grab dinner. And someone's like, "Yo, what's up, Biz Nasty?" And your mom's like, "What?"
Yeah. But you know what, though? It's definitely a hip-hop flavor name. If you wanted to put out a mixtape, you definitely get embraced right there and then. You know what I mean?
I know. So I already got the street cred. So I'm definitely sticking with it. It's been really good to me. But no complaints here. So thank you to Stephen Dixon for at least giving me one advantage in life.
How would you define your style of play when you were a player? You know, for all the listeners out there that may not have had a chance to see you play when you were in the show.
Well, it changed drastically from junior. I used to be a stay-at-home defenseman who used to provide a little bit of offense. But, you know, as you get up to the higher levels, you understand there's only so many positions and these players that are in them are world class. And, you know, I could only make it to a certain level playing the position that I wanted to. But fortunately for me, you know, at the point in time of where the NHL was, fighting was still somewhat relevant. But you also had to have the ability to be competent out there on the ice. You couldn't just be some goon flying around. Or at least you wouldn't get any type of ice time. So I adapted my role in the American Hockey League and basically in the NHL. I was known as a guy who would go out there, maybe a couple shifts a period. I would stick up for teammates and not shy away from any type of physical play. And really, if any of my teammates were ever being picked on or I think that somebody was trying to, I guess, headhunt would be the word, I would take it personally because I think it was my job and the reason I was getting paid was in order to protect those guys and let them focus on doing their job. And if I could step in and take that off their plate, I would do so.
So Biz, were you a D in junior or like when did you switch?
Yeah, I played under 17, under 18 as a defenseman for Team Canada. Well, Team Ontario, excuse me, for under 17. Went to World Junior Camp as a defenseman. I was drafted to the Pittsburgh Penguins in the fourth round as a defenseman. And it wasn't until my third year of my entry-level contract. The writing was on the wall. I spent 2 years basically in the ECHL where I was successful. I was an ECHL All-Star, but they didn't think I was going to be able to make it to the NHL as a defenseman. Because every time I got called up to the American League, I was kind of like that fifth or sixth. And they said, hey, like, we think we can turn you into a fourth line winger. Just be responsible defensively. Eat clock. You know, maybe you'll be lucky enough to figure out how to produce a little bit more offense at that level. And I just kind of transformed my game in my third year, my entry level, which was weird because the next year I re-signed in that summer. And that next year I ended up playing 15 games in the NHL. So I went from being in the ECHL to starting the year in the NHL within 12 months.
That's pretty impressive. Weird. I mean, you know, you had a long career, but for you, you became most memorable off the ice. And, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't even know who you were. And then all I see is this guy popping off on social media. He's bigger than some NHL stars now. Like, how did all that really come together for you?
I was a stubborn guy and I would let it fly a lot more when I was younger. And I never thought I would jump on Twitter until Scotty Upshaw, my teammate in Arizona, had convinced me. So after my first year playing with the Yotes and over the course of that season, a couple times he'd mention, hey, you know, jump on this. It's fun. You could joke around. And just from hearing about it, I thought it was you just updated people on what you were going to do. So I was like, that sounds kind of stupid. But then when I finally downloaded and figured out, oh, it's kind of a place for coming to, like, you know, live tweet sports or spout off about anything, opinions, and, you know, share products that you like, whatever. And that's when things started going a little crazy. And when I first started out on it, I was saying whatever. I didn't give a shit. It's a lot different than it is now. I'm more like that on the podcast now because at least I can articulate, because you could find yourself in trouble there, Akil. And that's like the one thing I would. Like if I had a kid and he was coming up in sports, I'd probably recommend that he pretty much stays off it and just allows other people to manage it. Just because in the era we are today, if I was saying that stuff now, being your age, it's, you know, it's just like it was jokes, but it's things that could be held accountable for years and years to come. It might affect you when you're 40 years old, and, you know, especially for kids who don't really know much and, you know, aren't really educated, especially on, like, political issues, mm-hmm. You know, you could slip up and it's being held against you forever. Cause if it's on the internet, it's kind of written forever.
Yeah. It's in stone right there. You definitely have to be careful. And that gives you a certain amount of freedom right now. You kind of come across as a guy who, like, you know, wears it on his sleeve and, you know, what he says, he means. Do you find that you take a lot of time before you press send?
That's the 100% difference of when I started to now, is where as you get older, and I think you just naturally feel a responsibility, because if there are younger people that are out there, you don't want to direct them into a negative space without having even thought of it or how it might impact others. And yes, I consider a lot more things before I hit send, whereas now I stay out of a lot of trouble, just because I'd rather educate myself on some opinion I might have right off the hop rather than hitting send and then having to figure that out later on. And that's the biggest difference of, mm-hmm. I guess, growing up in general, is just giving things more thought and being more considerate of the way others feel.
Yeah. I found myself in those positions sometimes where I just wrote a whole reply and just had to really just sit back and say, forget about it. It's not even worth it. But I want to talk more about your career, the Spit and Chicklets, and all your stuff that you've done outside of hockey. But I just wanted to go back to hockey just for one last question. But, you know, how hard was it for you to play the role of enforcer or agitator? And in your opinion, is there still room for that type of player in today's game?
I like the fact that it's still in the game organically. I really like the fact that it is essentially weeded itself out, where it's just you line up, you drop the gloves, and you got like the overall meatheads. And that's not because I'm not grateful the fact that it was still relevant when I played, because I don't think I would have made it to the NHL if it wasn't around. I just think maybe with, you know, some of the particular consequences, and I don't even want to say it's for me taking punches in the head. I might think it's more about the stress that it caused me leading up to it. How I maybe dealt with it, whether it was alcohol or drug abuse. I'm not blaming the fighting on the fact that I went and did those things, but I think that at the time it was partly how I coped with it, because I would get nervous. I didn't see myself as this big, tough guy. I looked at myself as like, I'm big enough to do it, and I know it's what I got to do to be here, and I don't mind doing it in order to stick up for my teammates. But I'm most nights I'm probably going to take a few lickings. Like I wasn't, like I said, I wasn't the toughest guy. So I'm glad that not a lot of these younger guys coming up are going to have to deal with maybe some of the things that I dealt with. Although I am happy for the person and the life I've lived that have brought me to this point. So I guess that's where I'll leave it. I'm happy with where it's at. I don't think it should be taken out of the game though.
And I think that probably says a lot about you just as a person. That's someone who wants to go stick up for their teammates. And one thing I find, like Akil can probably attest to this, is usually the guys on the team who are the enforcers or fighters are like usually the best locker room guys. And why do you think that is?
I think there's a lot of dynamics to it. Maybe the fact that they're well aware that you're not going to be taking them out of their position, because there really is only one. You know, you're there to protect them and that's it. You're not there to take away their ice time, or at least I wasn't. I guess for me in particular, it was more so my willingness to really do anything for my teammates. And I knew that I had a limited role where more of my energy could go into, say, you know, after a game that I didn't play, if when the boys were sitting down, taking off their gear in the locker room after, you know, I would help pass out protein shakes with the trainer, just because I wanted these guys to be, you know, fueled up and ready to go for let's say we had a back-to-back, or just even them replenishing in general. If one of them needed my pickup truck to move or do anything, I just wanted to be there for them in as many areas as much as possible. And I think that went a long way with them. And I'll say, I think me being a good teammate to the players especially when I was in Arizona, I think that might've got me another 2 years. I think that the management was well aware that I was creating a positive environment, not complaining a ton when I was a healthy scratch for 10 games in a row. They would see the frustration in me sometimes, but I would never want to put it on them. I wouldn't be like pouting in the locker room, especially on the 1st and 15th. Those were pretty good days too.
Yeah, you get that check, that nice little check. So what is your relationship with Ryan Whitney? And give us the story behind the formation of Spit and Chicklets.
I played with Witt in Pittsburgh a little bit, and that was the year I said that I played 15 games. That was the year they ended up going to the Stanley Cup Finals and losing to Detroit. And just from playing with him a little bit in the AHL when he'd been sent down the year before he was eventually called up to the NHL, and with the time there, I just became friends with him, me, Brooks Orpik, and a bunch of the younger guys. We would go out to eat all the time and hang out. And we kind of just kept in touch throughout the years. And after in each of ours last NHL training camp, which was in St. Louis, we both got invited there on a PTO. We were hanging out all the time, and we brought up the concept of getting together and telling stories and creating this platform where all these awesome guys were talked about in the hockey world. And I was still playing for a couple more years. So Rear Admiral reached out to him, and he's the one who started Spitting Chicklets with him, and then eventually got picked up by Barstool. And when I retired, it was initially the concept was with me, him, and Armstrong, Colby Armstrong. And I reached out and said, hey, like I've been a guest on a couple of times. Why don't I join the podcast and we could take this thing to the next level? And then we ended up doing so, and it just really took on a mind of its own. And it's nice to see a lot of other people starting podcasts and showing these guys amazing personalities and growing the game in a different way, as you mentioned off the top. It's been fun. And you know, the thing I love most about it is there's really no cattiness about it. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the hockey community is really happy for all these other guys starting platforms and podcasts in order to interview all these different people for different reasons, as you might connect with the guy and have the similar interests where you bring more out of them than an interview that he had with us. So it's like, keep snapping it all around, and so everyone can figure out how cool the game really is.
Well, you know, for the listeners, they kind of have heard like how this started and stuff, but Elijah and I played together in Niagara for a few years, and we were best buddies, and we'd do like those appearances at school together. We'd go out for breakfast together before games, same place every day. You might know the place, Lancer. It's on Hartsville Road.
No, but I know you played in Niagara. Good okay, spot yeah. to play.
Yeah, awesome place. Yeah. And so Elijah and I, you know, we just sit down and just banter for hours and just argue over the dumbest stuff. And like one day this guy was just like, you guys should just like start a podcast and just talk about a bunch of nonsense. So it's kind of cool how that kind of happened. And then we originally asked Kwame to be a part of it. And he was just like, yeah, I'll come on for an episode. But we're like, nah, like you want me to be a part of it. And now we can't even get like 10 seconds to talk. So it's fun. But you know, when I look at you, you know, you played and now you're retired. You have you're part of the Spin Chicklets. Everyone knows him. You know, you have a phrase, not a big deal. You know, if anyone says that, like everyone ultimately thinks about you. So kinda admire, you know, how you kind of did everything. It's been amazing. It's been amazing to follow. Like I played in Niagara, like you said, and you know, every time I drive home to Toronto, I just put on an episode and just they're so entertaining.
He doesn't even listen to our own episodes.
Oh, I can't listen to my own podcast. I can't hear the sound of my own voice, but I think it's awesome what you guys are doing too. And just to like your overall point, and thank you for the very kind words, is that, you know, we're willing to put ourselves out there. And I think that that's the biggest hurdle. And, you know, there's a lot of deterrence because there can be a lot of negativity online and other things. But I think it's unbelievable that so many different guys like yourself are starting to show different sides of the game too. I mean, keep in mind, like I would imagine you go on to be a star in the NHL. There's a lot more credibility that you're going to give your podcast that I could ever give mine. And just for your willingness to do it while you're playing and to grow the game, dude, tip of the cap to all you guys for doing this. And any type of promotion that we can give you as well to snap it around, feel free to reach out, man. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that. So, you guys, like, how many episodes you guys at?
I think we're just at 284. We just had on Dave Hansen, one of the Hansen brothers, yeah. Slapshot.
No way.
Very, very interesting guy. He told some amazing stories. He was very articulate about how they made the movie and all these behind-the-scenes stories. It was incredible how the movie came to be. Was one of the guys was telling his sister about the situation that the team in Johnstown was in, and she was listening to it, and she's like, this sounds ridiculous. Like, the fact that you're, like, even wow. doing this professionally and earning money. Like, so she went and spent 2 weeks with the team. Rode on the bus for a couple bus trips and wrote it all down. And from there on out, they wrote a screenplay and the movie came to fruition. So it was pretty remarkable to hear the story. And if you guys want to check it out, but that's what we do. We just bring on these different characters to explain, you know, what they've been through and what they've seen. And to me, the old school guys and the way things used to be, oh man, it is just light. It seems like light years away.
Like Guy Lafleur between you know, periods, having a cigarette.
On the bench. The trainer used to light a cigarette for him and hand it to him on the bench, apparently. So, it was a different world.
Yeah. Speaking of movies, do you remember Young Blood?
Young Blood, yeah. I thought that was a decent one. My GM and junior, Mike Fiuta, was actually in the movie.
Okay. I hear there are actually some scripts going around. They're trying to remake that.
Okay.
So that would be pretty interesting. It's so, and you know, let's go with movies. Why do you think it's so hard to put out a really good hockey movie? Because, you know, you got the Mighty Ducks. That was acclaimed.
Slapshot.
Miracle. What's the other one that Jaden Bearshaw did?
Like there's the Mystery Alaska one.
Yeah, Mr. Alaska is pretty good. I'd say that's probably my second favorite. The reason I think it's so hard is because for any sports movie, really, it's hard to give it that credibility because we know at what speed it's played. We know on what. So to give it any type of legitimacy, that's why to me, Slapshot is probably the best sports movie of all time, aside from my bias that I love hockey, is at that point in time, that was pretty much exactly what that league was as far as the hockey world. And yeah, it's a little overblown maybe on some of the shifts where they're like going around like swinging sticks and hitting guys in the head and like jumping over the net. But it was pretty darn close in how silly everything was in the minor leagues. I mean, I got to experience the minor leagues at the ECHL level, and even that was in the 2000s. And even some of the stuff going down, it was just like, oh my God, this is still fairly behind the NHL standards, that's for sure.
Okay, so back to the Spin Chicklets. Who would you say the most interesting interview was, and maybe the worst, if you remember?
Oh, the best.
284 episodes. It's a lot.
We're at 284 now, so geez. But I've only been on board for, I think, I'd say 200 of those. Okay. Most interesting guests. There are a lot of them. We had Nello Ferrero on, who's the heiress to a candy fortune, but he was slumming it up in the minors for years. If you looked at his hockey DB, he was calling teams, acting as his own agent. Pretending he was a French guy with a French accent.
And he totally did the French accent.
Well, then the guy who was the GM for the team he was calling, one of them anyway, he was French, and he didn't realize. So the guy started speaking back to him in French, and he panicked, so he just hung up the phone.
Oh, wow.
So we've had some interesting characters. Tim Stapleton played in Russia. And we've had a few characters who have came on and told some of these Russian stories, but I don't think any better than Tim Stapleton. And we want to talk about light years away. Some of the things going on in the KHL when he was there, your jaw would drop. So I would say he was one of the most surprising. As far as like people, some guys come on, they get a little bit nervous, and I didn't really realize that. It was kind of a shock. Some guys who I knew were characters who were incredible storytellers, I would invite them on, and even some of them had asked to come on. And when they get on, you're just like, oh my God, they're not telling it how they would in the locker room, or they're not even going remotely anywhere near where they would have. So it was more so, oh, we might be putting this person in a vulnerable position because we had such high expectations where we were maybe asking the wrong questions. But I think I would have assumed that coming on our podcast, people know that I think people coming to listen just want old school stories and stories that are going to make them laugh. It's to keep their mind off things. But as I've grown and the podcast has gotten as big as it has, I think that what you need to focus on is going into it with an extremely open mind, because it's a little naive to have your expectations set where you need to try to bring as much positive and good things out of that person. And maybe it's not always the way you were thinking.
Well, you know what? Like I've been nervous for one interview, and it was yours, this man, check this one, just because I knew, like, it's just like my age demographic. I knew all like the guys my age would listen to it, and you know, a bunch of people. So I don't know why I was nervous. I don't know why, but I definitely was. That's for sure.
We were blown. You were beyond your years, and you were great. And some of the young guys you could tell, but with you, we couldn't tell. You came off awesome. And even when we hung up the phone, we're like, oh my God, people are going to love that. And the fact that we were going to get to promote your podcast and send some direction and traffic towards you, it was just overall, it was such a great experience.
That's funny, because like afterwards, I was like, damn, like I butchered that.
No, not at all. And then you came on for our EA Sports tournament, the hockey.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How are you doing that?
Next question.
Oh, geez, you're asking the kill. Yeah, I think he lost. But that was a cool experience, and something that a lot of these younger kids are getting into is video games.
Yeah.
And I guess part of my advice to anyone starting out anything, especially when it comes to business, is give every type of demographic like your attention, because you don't know, like the sky's the limit. I would have never have got involved in these e-games, but when Grinnelli started talking about them, I'm like, yeah, I'm like, go grow it. Go do your thing, buddy. Your age group is interested in video games much more than mine, and now they're being played online. So, you know, even he can open up a revenue stream for himself. So, you know, congratulations to him, and it was a really cool tournament, and we'll be doing more in the esports sector for sure.
Yeah, and you look at Chicklets, you guys are kind of doing everything, video games, podcasts. I'm looking at your background here, and I see the not a big deal, the plaque, but the one thing that stuck out to me from the start is that pink bottle there, that pink Whitney.
Yeah.
How did you guys come up with that? And I'm going to ask this question. What do I mix with it?
Oh, that's some of these people drinking it straight are crazy to me. I'm a bit of a
softy. I tried it straight, and it's too much.
It's too strong. Much. Yeah, it's like drinking diesel. I usually mix it with a little bit of like good club soda. Like I'll go get a nice bottled one, and that's all I need. People have been mixing it with like everything. People have been mixing it with Hennessy, and they call it the Bobby and Whitney. And I was like, okay. If you go on Twitter and you hashtag it, you'll see all these crazy mixtures that people have been collabing with it. But how it came to be was we had New Amsterdam jump on as a presenting sponsor of our podcast when it started picking up steam. And they were a vodka that was trying to rebrand themselves and you know, they were thinking of any innovative ways to do so. And they're like, well, we want to market to the hockey world, so why don't we jump on this podcast and see where it goes? Mm-hmm. And in the first episode, they wanted to tell everyone what we mix with New Amsterdam vodka. And Whit broke it down because he loves pink lemonade and vodka. And all of a sudden, all these people, after he did this funny little breakdown and described it, all these people started showing us and sending us pictures and hashtagging Pink Whitney, Pink Whitney. So I was saying, hey, we need to do this to Barstool. At first they were a little hesitant. So was Ryan. He's like, nah, let's just let it ride out. And I think everyone just enjoy mixing it with the New Amsterdam vodka. I said, no, we need to do this. So me and my business partner, we went and bought the domains and started getting the process done in order to like, if we wanted to bring this to Canada or whatever. Finally, Ryan Whitney's wife brought it up to him that so many of her friends had been talking about it, that we should start it. He called me and I said, perfect. If you're willing to get behind it, maybe Barstool will listen. And then Barstool listened. They said, yeah, actually New Amsterdam's been thinking and talking about it because they've been seeing so much traffic on it, and perfect worlds collided. And next thing you know, it's the highest selling vodka and nice. And really any type of spirit in Canada. That's in July. Nuts. And we sold over 1 million bottles in the first month. It's been crazy. I think we sold 1.6 million bottles in the month of July.
Do you do you chirp Whitney about it now and say, yeah, that paycheck is pretty nice, huh? Remember who didn't want to do this?
I say this to anyone. I say it's not a dumb idea. Try to execute it. If you land on your face, yeah, whatever. Wipe off the dirt. Part of people's problems is they're too unwilling to take the lunge and put themselves out there. I mentioned that. Yeah. Well, how do we know if we would have had the world's biggest hockey podcast, if that's even what it is, if we wouldn't have put ourselves out there and even tried it? How do we know if the vodka is not going to be successful if we don't land on our faces and see if it worked?
I mean, the worst thing anybody can say to you is no, and you never know unless you try. So there's no failing in anything. And you know, as human beings, especially people in sports and entertainment, you've got to be creative. You just got to go for it. And some things are going to stick. Some things aren't going to stick. But the ones that are going to stick, man, you're going to have a ball with it. But, you know, it all comes back to your work ethic and the group of guys you're working with. And you guys seem like you have a really cool team over there. And you guys are also known for not holding back. Do you feel like the coming generations of players will be more expressive while at the same time maintaining that respect for the game and its traditions?
Yeah, I think these kids are very respectful. And I think that I think because of where the social standard is and people are more aware of it because of online access and social media, I think the next generation is starting to understand that you have to be a lot more like inclusive. And it goes really everything that's been happening with the Hockey to Diversity Alliance and all that. And I think it's definitely headed to a good place. And I think that even since I've started the podcast, mind you, is, you know, I'm trying to be more aware of what I'm saying in order, because I know a lot of the younger generation is listening. So yes, I think that more of them are going to be expressive, but in the right ways. And I think it's great. And I think a lot of people have more access to do things on their own. And going back to my comment earlier, just on the last question with the Pink Whitney and stuff like that, yeah, and tying it all back to trying anything, is that's the one thing that that fighting did teach me is like, you got to get back up and you have to stand back in there. And I mentioned the negative aspects, but I don't think that without the fighting and doing what I had to do, it would have prepared me as much for now the second phase of my life, which is media. Because I find that that could be just as taxing, if not more so mentally, than my fighting career ever did. Way more.
Because it's a whole different mindset. It's a whole different type of dedication, you know, and you have to put in that work. If, you know, you guys wouldn't be where you are if you guys didn't put in that work.
Yeah, no. And that just ties back to also the question that you just asked about the, you know, the next generation and stuff like that. I think that, I think it's going to be a good lesson for them if they listen to this, but also a way they can transition it out of hockey.
So a little bit off topic, I mentioned, you know, Elijah and I played together in Niagara before, and I had the best like 4 years of my life, probably. Just, you know, you've been at the Meridian Center. It's a beautiful rink. We had sick fans, playoffs are nuts. We found our little places in town to eat all the time, and we'd get discounts and all that. We kind of felt like the Leafs of St. Catharines. So we had a great time, you know, a couple good nights at Falls View, probably more. Worse than good, but what would you say your favorite part of the Niagara region is?
When I always go back, I like to go to Niagara on the lake and enjoy some nice lunches and some of the vineyards with my parents. Times have changed. I used to go to what was it called?
Forgot to mention, but he's a Welland native, so yeah.
That's yeah, fine. Yeah, I'm from Welland, Ontario. What was the place in St. Catharines where all the bars were?
St. Paul Street.
Yeah. Well, there's, yeah, St. Paul Street. And there was also this place by the water. People are going to scald me when they listen to this because I forgot the name. But, yeah, I've calmed down quite a bit. So I usually don't leave Welland. I like to see all my friends and family. But the casino is pretty nice, although I'm not much of a gambler. But I would definitely have to pick Niagara on the Lake just because of its beauty and how they keep that kind of that older structure.
Right. One thing I actually respect you for is you know, like obviously you're a huge name and everyone knows you and stuff, but I remember one night the boys were out and my teammate Andrew Brewer is like, yo, saw Viz's story, he's in town, like invite him out with us tonight. I was like, why would I do that? Like, he's not gonna come out with an OHL team. And he's like, no, I'll do it, man, just see what he says. I'm like, all right, I'll just do it. And you actually got back and you're like, yeah, I'm taking it easy tonight, but have fun. But no, after that, I was like, gee, this guy's a good guy. Like,
that's how big of a loser I am now. Nobody can drag me out. I'm sticking in my parents' basement, and that's it. I'm sitting in my fart suit. That's about it.
Biz, you know, you brought up the HDA. What were your thoughts on the presentation during the first weekend of return to play with Dumba taking the knee, as well as Reeves, Sagan, Dickinson, and Leonard?
I thought Dumba did an unbelievable job. I don't know how he wasn't nervous. He looked
He looked
calm as a cucumber in that aspect. So I think it's great. It's a human rights issue, and the worst part about all of this is how political it's gotten, where I think it's massive and a massive move for the league in general, because it opens up a lot of opportunities for people who would have otherwise, you know, watch the sport, and it's got to be more inclusive. And I think that, you know, I think that when it gets brought to light on such a massive platform, that, you know, it might open a lot of people's eyes to be willing to change. Now, keep in mind, I'm from Canada, and I think in Canada, it's a lot less toxic than it is maybe in the Southern United States. So now saying that, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So it's nice to see that they're taking the proper steps in order to making it a very inclusive game. And I mean, just asking you guys from what your standpoint is, would you see it as an inclusive game already? Or have you ever dealt with issues personally that you felt maybe have held you back or maybe not made you feel as inclusive in the hockey community?
Well, let me take that first as a non-hockey player. I would say, and I've always said this, the game of hockey has always been diverse. Okay. Not as diverse as we want it to be, but it's always been diverse. You know, minorities have been playing the game of hockey since the 1800s, indigenous, blacks, the Colored Hockey League of the Maritimes. You know, the first person to play in the National Hockey League of color was a guy by the name of Larry Kwong, and that was in the 50s, and he was of Chinese descent. So it's always been diverse. The problem with hockey is it hasn't always been inclusive, and the inclusiveness is the thing that is going to change the game and make the game go to a place where it becomes a lot more diverse, a lot more people want to get into the game. Because, you know, inclusivity means that there are people in the boardrooms. There are people sitting beside the Gary Bettmans. There are people who are sitting right beside the GMs. They're the coaches and all that. You know, if you look at the coaching staffs of all the National Hockey Leagues, there's only a couple of black assistant coaches. So when you see a lot more people of color being included in these higher positions, I think it's going to inspire the younger generation to look at it and say, oh, I can do that as well. And also, when you see it's more inclusive, the style and the conversations are a lot different. And it just, again, goes back to the inspiration of people and people wanting to be a part of it. And again, when you're more inclusive, it makes you feel more welcome to the space of hockey.
Tommy, you've been preparing that for your whole life.
I've been thinking about that for a very long time, my boys.
You delivered that. Unbelievable. And it's such a great perspective to have. And that's why it's great to keep having these types of conversations as to why. And that's what the frustrating part for me is, the people that, and I don't think there's I don't think there's many of them, and that's a good thing, that aren't really willing to listen to that. Mm. That's the frustrating part. It's just like that dialogue is very important. And that's, that couldn't be more than a fair reason to want what you want.
Right. Right.
And so, the way you explained it.
Mm-hmm. So earlier on in the year, I think in like January, Kwame was working with the Black Hockey History truck, and I remember it made its stop to Scarborough, and made my way there, and I was just looking at the board of all the players who played in the NHL who are, you know, of color, and I remember it's actually on video. I remember like seeing you there, and like I was like, what the hell is Biz doing on this? And then Kwame told me you're half black, I guess, and
a quarter.
Yeah, okay,
my mom's half.
Okay, so so you're basically. I want to know if being a quarter black, did you hear stuff like during your career, and did it like offend you in any way just because like your mom is black, and what's your overall view on systematic racism in hockey?
I didn't deal with anything personally. I also don't know if a lot of people knew, especially early on, just because, you know, internet wasn't especially as I was coming up through minor hockey. I never had an issue with it. And I think a lot of people thought I was French Canadian, which, you know, my father is. So no, I think that there was an issue that just popped up with the GTHL, and I don't know exactly the full details with it, but it seems as if though, like even at that level, changes needed to be made in order to make it more inclusive. And the fact that in 2020 that had to be addressed is maybe a little shocking, but I think that overall what's happened has made people realize like, holy shit, yeah, there is a lot of things that need to change here. So I'm looking forward to seeing the changes that have been made and what they lead to. And as far as the systemic racism, like there's just really no denying it. As to what level or scale it is in which sector you're talking about, I don't know. But for just even the reason you mentioned in the last thing you said was, you know, I'd like to see, you know, more people in higher positions. So not only can it inspire the youth, but also for people who are coming into the professional world, let's say at the NHL level, they can at least have someone to go to and mentor them and feel comfortable going to, because they can relate on certain issues that maybe they've been had to deal with in the past, right? So I think that it sucks that it has to happen so late in 2020, but it's great to see that the proper changes are being made. It's right. Like, it's obviously too late, but it's finally starting to be addressed.
Well, it's never too late, because, you know, I have a son who's going to be 3. And so all these changes, all these things that we're doing right now, we're planting the seed. And so when he becomes 18, 19, 20, and he's looking at the game of hockey, I'm hoping, I'm praying that the game is a lot more inclusive and it looks a lot different and feels a lot different than it is today and what it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah. And I guess I could sum it up as this, and going back to your last question, was I never personally dealt with it. That's why when more and more of this stuff started popping up, I was kind of like, I never saw any of this going on. Like, what's happening? Like, everybody's kind of throwing everyone into one group here. But then as you get older and you mature and you start listening to all, you know, these different stories, is you realize just because I didn't see it doesn't mean it ain't happening and it doesn't exist.
Did you play with players of color? I'm sorry to cut you off, but did you play with players of color growing up?
Yeah. In the OHL I did. I played with Hanley in Owen Sound. I played with JST in Ontario. Who else did I play with in professional hockey? I'm sure there's a list of guys. I just, off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone else right now.
But in playing with those guys, have you ever had a conversation? Have they ever confided in with you or ever even talked about it? Because it's from what I'm gathering is, like, you know, when you're hearing all these things, you personally are just like, what did I just miss? What have I missed in the game of hockey?
Yeah, I never had those conversations with teammates because it always seemed like they fit in and nothing was really wrong. Mm-hmm. But we're also getting to a point in time right now where people are being a lot more open with their feelings, which I think is very important as well. I wear my heart on my sleeve and I have no problem talking about that aspect as well. So maybe some of those guys were going through things and they just never came to me about it. But personally, no, I never had anyone or saw any type of discrimination based on the color of guys' skins or where they came from.
Interesting.
I said skins as opposed to skin. I said it plural. I came off sounding really stupid.
You know, but as a, you know, you're a blunt speaker and I love that about you. And I got to ask you this. For the majority of white players that you know, former and current, how comfortable or uncomfortable are they around this issue of race in the game?
I think a lot of them feel uncomfortable speaking up about it because they haven't experienced it.
Right.
And they haven't seen it. And you know, they're kind of in the like, you remember when everyone put out the black squares on Instagram? Everyone had their own opinion about that. But with that, to me, and why I posted it was like, it's obviously time where we post this in solidarity, where we need to shut the up and just flat out listen.
Right.
And for about a week, you know, we were just ingesting these stories and what people had been through. We were like, oh my, there's far too many here to ignore, guys. Like, this is an issue. And whether or not you have seen it or experienced it in your life, it's time to, as I said, just shut the up and listen. And it was... And I think that the NHL and the players have done a great job in responding to that. Whereas, yeah, I would probably say they lie on the side of it's uncomfortable to talk about for them because they just haven't experienced it. And they don't want to say the wrong thing. And they don't want to feel the need to speak up for anybody who has been through any of that. They should just be there to lend a helping hand. So, but the players that have stood up and said something, good for you. I mean, when we recorded that episode, when we tried to send the message to our fans, I was a wreck for a week. I was so nervous because I didn't want to say the wrong thing in order to create more, you know, more people being upset. And it was a very unsettling time, and for right reason.
We had Jacob Slavin on. What a great guy. Not only is he killing it right now on the ice, but off the ice. You know, he's the kind of guy too, and he'll give me a call. Like, he called me before he went into the bubble, and we had a personal conversation about some of these issues. And the one thing I loved about what he said to me was, you know, I want to learn. I want to sit back. I want to listen, and I want to learn. And I'm thinking that for a lot of the white players that are playing in the National Hockey League that feel uncomfortable, I think for them to get comfortable is for them to have conversations with guys like Akil, like Elijah, like myself, like, you know, Joel Ward, you know, guys who have gone through it or guys who know about the subject. Because I think if they have those type of conversations and they're willing to listen, you know, it's going to be a lot better for them. You know, the most iconic picture in this situation where we're in right now for me was the photo of Tyler Seguin in Dallas. and he was just, he had his hand on his knee, and it just seemed like he was just listening to the speaker when he was at the protest, and it just felt like he was just, he wanted to listen, he wanted to soak it all in, you know? So, and we got,
and he wanted to give up his platform as well in order to, you know, show people like, listen, it's time to shut up and listen.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I think it's great that certain guys stepped up and did that. And, you know, there were other players who faced a little bit of criticism as well for not stepping up and saying something. For me, it's more the, I could understand why they wouldn't if they don't feel comfortable and they feel that this isn't an issue that they feel they have the right to speak on because they're uneducated in it. Right. And it was good to see Seguin step up.
Put yourself in that situation where Reeves, Laine, Seguin, Dixon, they took the knee. What would a young Biz Nasty have done in that situation?
Oh man, the kneeing situation is one that, like, it's, everyone's so sensitive to it on both sides of it. I have zero problem with Kaepernick taking a knee and anyone else doing so. If anybody wants to make a gesture in order to show solidarity for human rights, I couldn't imagine that upsetting me at all. If they want to do it, good for them. But on the flip side of it, I also wouldn't be one to criticize anyone who didn't do it. Is that fair?
I think so. I think so. Because it's in your heart.
Yeah. So it's, it was such a touchy subject there for a while, but it was, I mean, Dumba did it. And then I know the guys beside him did it. And then that kind of ruffled some feathers, but hey man, all the power to Dumba and fight for what you believe in.
So, you know, just looking at your HockeyDB earlier, you played in a lot of different teams, a lot of different cities, been a part of a lot of different locker rooms. Who would you say the funniest guy you've played with was, and, you know, maybe a story behind it?
I mean, just Keith Yandel's every day. Keith Yandel was funny because I didn't mind being the butt of the joke, and I throw that into the section of just kind of being the speed bag / water boy / door guy, anything for the team mentality. And he would just chirp me all day in the locker room, and the guys would howl, and you know, the whole team had a good time at my expense. And he was obviously funny. Even I'd be laughing. So it's not for, I guess, one incident in particular. He was just a funny guy overall. Brizgalov was always interesting because you never knew what was going to come out of his mouth. And I think we saw the epitome of that when he ended up getting into HBO 24/7 with the Philadelphia Flyers. So he was always a quirky guy and definitely spiked up conversation.
Where was your favorite place to play and why?
I'm going to have to say Arizona, just because playing in the desert and it being unbelievable weather all year round, well, at least while you're playing here. And I know people say, well, oh, maybe the team wasn't that good. But when I first got here, we made playoffs 3 years in a row, and we went to the conference finals in that third year. So only my last 2 years did we not make playoffs. And the 1 year was a half year because of the lockout. It was very good to me. The people were amazing. I still live here. And just overall, nightlife was great. Restaurants were good. There's not one thing wrong with Arizona, other than maybe the rink's a little far away. It's in Glendale. But there, I think we're going to get a new rink here soon, and that's going to be buzzing.
Mm. Yeah, I'll have to get out to a game
there. I actually love that rink. I played there an exhibition game. You're actually there. I saw you giving the coaches Pink Whitney's struts. And I loved playing in that rink. I loved it. So
Elijah, I brought the boys Pink Whitney, my old coaches that I'd won the Calder Cup with. I had to thank them for everything they've done for me. That was Mike Stuthers and the crew that was in Ontario. We won it in Manchester though, so I'll have to get you guys some Pink Whitney as well.
Definitely. Thank you. That's the best way to treat them, I think. You know, give them the best vodka in the world. So
if you're of age though, are you of age?
I'm 21.
All right, perfect.
International now.
I don't want to get in trouble here.
I see you guys on YouTube a lot. As everyone knows, kids are eating up YouTube. My little brother, Akil's little brother, they're just on YouTube 24/7. And one of the YouTube videos that I saw of yours that I really liked was the Road Warriors with Sean Avery. And there's no more. Is that something that you're planning on continuing, or are you just done with that?
Yeah, with trying to expand in all these different areas and, you know, having the Coyotes draw away some of my attention and, of course, the podcast going to 2 episodes a week, we're eventually going to implement way more video. And that's a big reason why even during the pandemic, we released all the interviews we had banked that were released on the podcast, but we released them in video form on our YouTube channel in order to grow it. So over the course since the quarantine started, I think we picked up, you know, close to 100,000 people on YouTube. So now we have a total of 130,000. We're going to start doing more sandbaggers, which is the golf match we did against Sidney Crosby. And I just think overall, and it's not necessarily an insult, I just think the younger generation's attention spans are shrinking.
Yeah.
They want to consume more and more and more at a fast pace. And anytime anything's over, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes in length, you could tell that there's a drop off. Well, you know, that's why we're going to start releasing shorter edited videos as well. And just really, and it goes back to us doing the video game thing too, is why would we not prepare for the next wave of consumer? It's like the NHL, there's an argument going on online about whether that they should be wearing whatever they want to the rink or should they stick in suits.
What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know, man. The NBA has gotten as big as it is by letting these guys show off their personalities. I don't give a shit if the guy's wearing a suit into a rink. Put on a Gucci tracksuit and throw it up on Instagram. I'll like that. I'll be more interested in that. You know, okay, I like what he's wearing there. That's cool what he did with that. It's style. It's showing off your personality in a different form. And that might not necessarily be the guy who's willing to give you an unbelievable press or post game. But he might be a hype beast and on the fashion blogs, keeping up with the latest trends. And I enjoy that aspect of sport and guys showing that side.
But seeing Brent Burns come to the, like, if you were to let Brent Burns get busy on his own clothing, I don't know, man.
As long as you keep it, as long as you keep it stylish, you know,
you might attract the Joe Rogan crowd or the hunters with all the camo on going into the ring, but it's a different form of fan. And there's a connection there. And I think that once, especially for hockey, right? Because there's still such a big demographic that they can have attached to it. Mm. Whereas you might have to do so by, oh, this person started following Akil Thomas on Instagram and they really like what they're about and his fashion. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, they're a professional athlete. What sport are they playing? Oh, I'm going to start watching them play hockey. And that maybe could be how you draw someone into the sport. And I think the more you allow a guy to show off their personalities, and that's just one aspect of it, that how could it ever hurt you? Yeah. It'd be the same way of letting, like, Marner playing a ton of video games. I think he just bought into an esports team out of Toronto.
Oh, wow.
So now that crowd might be more intrigued to watch a Leaf game. Not like they need the fans. They might need to trim some fat, actually, because it's getting a little crazy with that fan base.
Yeah.
Because Elijah was the most, like... just gotty with his
I already brought that. I didn't wear suits all the time.
I know, but like this guy would wear a Lakers jersey and like a blazer and like cowboy boots or something and like a cowboy hat. This guy was an idiot.
But guess what, Elijah? We're talking about it now, aren't we?
Exactly. That's not the suit you wore, killer.
This guy's pregame meal, like on the road, was mini Starburst. Like, this guy just did not care.
Wow. Okay, so
not
Elijah
entirely.
Was a natural.
He's just like, whatever makes me feel good. If I'm feeling good, I'm going to play good. If I'm all pissed off, not feeling good, then I'm not going to play well.
And if you ain't having your Starburst, you ain't having a good time.
I ain't happy.
Like, if I'm going to wear, like, Lulu pants to a game, like, I just feel comfortable. Like, I'm in my element, but like if I'm in that tight suit and to worry about my tie and stuff, I just feel like uncomfortable and I just can't wait to get it off. So I agree with everyone just wearing kind of whatever, as long as you know, don't wear like, I don't know, pajamas or something.
I think I would still rock a suit, but I'd like to see everybody else getting to wear what they want. And, and going back to the Starburst comment, I think the only reason that, who's the guy from Seattle? Marshawn Lynch scored all his touchdowns because of the superpower that Skittles gave him, right?
Yeah.
They got superpowers in them.
Yeah. And just to just put a cap on the suit thing, as a fan of the game, I think it's really cool seeing the guys dressed to the nine looking fresh. I think they look fresh when they come in. And I think just how it, you know, just the visual shot of them coming in, and you know, they got the cool shoes and the sweet suit. I think I like it. I like it. So
I was all over Instagram and saw people reposting Matthews's outfits all over their story.
Yeah. They were tagging what the prices of everything he was wearing was worth, where you could get the shoes. So that type of traction, and given the fact that everybody's on social media for the next wave of consumer, and they're just on their phones in general, that tells me that that is going to benefit the league. Yeah. Now, I'm more of a traditionalist where if all the guys wear suits, I don't care. But I see the other, if you're looking at it from a financial position and in a business perspective, let them wear whatever they want. Let them say whatever they want. Let's have a, I'm just as intrigued by the off-court drama of the NBA as I am the on-court product. I find it fascinating. These guys are, they don't give a, it's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, so what's next for the Biz Nasty brand? And can you see yourself getting into the film producer role, maybe acting, doing something in that respect?
Yeah, I mean, I've tried a little bit. Acting is very difficult, and you know, sometimes you watch what you do, and I'm just like, oh, like cringed out. Especially with these New Amsterdam commercials airing 20 times a day, for crying out loud.
But that's how you're gonna know. That's how you're gonna get better, bro. But you have to watch it.
But exactly, you got to take your lickings, and it's definitely something that in the future that I would like to have more time to do. And I think I don't want to say I get bored of things easily, but I think in, you know, 5-10 years, I might not need to do the podcast twice a week, where I would like to focus on doing more video form. And that might actually give me more pleasure at that point in time, and doing these cool features on individuals and more road warriors, as you mentioned. So I never close the door on anything. I'm just more, I'm one of my hardest critics. So I know if I'm not necessarily that great at something, you'd either need to spend a lot of time improving it in order to keep doing it, and or just back off until you have the time to do so.
Lacrosse, one of those things we all know about. Lacrosse tryout,
that was more to draw attention to the sport. I like spectating box lacrosse and now outdoor lacrosse, which I'm starting to learn a little bit more, but that was more, they came and they're like, hey, let's collab here, let's have some fun. And I think the whole promo ended up getting, you know, I think collectively over 1 million eyes.
Wow. Did you see yourself getting in a movie?
Ever?
Yeah. I mean,
maybe as like an extra.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
R.A., my co-host for Spit and Chicklets, he got in the movie The Town, and he was the cook in the scene. When the cop was grilling the girl about information. So R.A. was in an Oscar movie.
The movie, the Killing of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, I'm in the boxcar scene, and my scene, you know, the director told me to get into Jeremy Renner's way because the stunt guys were just like, no, you know, we let the stunt guys do all that action.
Oh. And
the director.
Are you still seeing residual checks?
No, not at all.
Ah, that sucks. But at least you got some screen time.
I got some screen time. It looks pretty dope. I love that. I'll take a scene with Jeremy Renner any day.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. That's big time.
Every interview we ask our guests to tell us their, you know, their top five songs they'd listen to, maybe rolling to the rink, getting prepared for a game 7. I'm actually very curious to know what you kind of listen to. So. Go ahead and give us your top five.
I like AC/DC. I feel like they have great pump up music and they have a very unique sound. That would have definitely been one song on the way. They have a bunch of hits, so none in particular. I could say, what was the one of their most popular? Hell's Bells.
Hell's Bells is a big one.
Yeah, Hell's Bells.
These boys don't know about AC/DC, by the way. Okay,
I do. Let them
fall. A little bit.
Who are you guys listening to? Who are your guys? Lil Pump? You got Lil Xan?
Akil. That's all Akil. Akil's
no
Uzi, Juice WRLD. He's all into that.
Hey, Juice WRLD. Yeah, Lil Uzi. Yeah, but not the other guys.
I was introduced to hip hop at an early age because my cousin was really into it, and a couple of my first albums were Nas, Illmatic. I had the double disc Forever by Wu-Tang.
Of course you got Wu Tang.
To mention Wu Tang.
Of course he's got Wu Tang.
I would put Triumph by Wu Tang probably in my top five hype song. Nice. I used to listen a lot to Rage Against the Machine.
Okay.
That's when I Red Hot Chili Peppers. That was when I started really getting into music. Oasis. But I don't mind some of the new stuff. As far as like new hip hop artists, I like J. Cole a lot. I feel like, you know, there's a message there. I feel like he's got good flow. I love Kendrick. That Mad City album was that's probably top 10 for me. Mm. ATL Aliens by
Outkast
is, that's probably in my top 25 albums of all time. So that's just what gets me going. What other rock bands would fire me up? I've seen Arcade Fire live. They were incredible. Okay. My Morning Jacket is a band that not a lot of people know about that I really enjoyed. And live, they're one of the best acts. Like, if you're going to pay someone to headline a festival, My Morning Jacket, a band that you've probably never heard of, who play like all the instruments, they sound different almost in every song. They're just very special. $1 million to get them.
Oh, wow.
They're some of the best. Eddie Vedder was great to see live. I saw him by himself, and I saw him with Pearl Jam a couple times. So I like it all. I'm not really beat down into one type of genre or anything. Country
gets you pumped up.
Country, eh.
Isn't that Elijah's thing? Country music?
Don't disrespect me like that, Kwame.
We're cowboy boots.
Don't disrespect me.
He's at Boots and Hearts next summer. He'll be front row.
Win last year.
Like, is that Elijah?
I went for one day.
Is he crowd surfing
weekend.
Right now?
Elijah and I went to Boots last year. It was actually
I went
fun.
One day. Akil went the whole week.
Is that Elijah crowd surfing in overalls right now? With cowboy boots on?
With a straw.
You see me do, but I don't know.
You know, I got to rate you for saying Nas Illmatic. Now, the audience isn't going to get to see this, but you'll be. I literally have to pull this out from underneath.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Did he sign it?
Yeah. It's from that album. He came to Toronto, and a buddy of mine promoted that tour. I keep everything, man. I keep everything, and so
antique,
I had yes, antiques. But it's his signature on the Illmatic. I'm just trying to flatten it out because I'm going to frame it and all that. So it was coincidental that you said that.
As far as how fluid Nas was, he was like a modern day poet.
Yeah,
as far as how he rapped, and that's
I don't know if Akil knows who Nas is.
Mm-hmm.
Chill.
This is where the crickets go.
That's all right, though. I mean, some of this new stuff, it just doesn't have a lot of context to it. There's not a lot being said. It's a lot of the same things, and it's just kind of like, eh.
And the
beats get a little bit too – it's like the beats got to take over what the actual message is in order for it to sell.
They follow the exact same way. Have you listened to Griselda, any of the guys from Griselda?
No.
All right, take a listen to those guys. They're out of Buffalo, New York, man. They're killing it. They're very underground, very old school Wu-Tang style. Very, you know, their stories of the streets is very like cinematic, how they rhyme and stuff like that. I think you'd appreciate that. So if you ever get a chance to, you know, take a listen to that. But Biz, we appreciate you jumping on board, rocking with us, man. You know, you don't have to do this. You know, you guys are at that point where you don't have to come rock with the little guys. So we really appreciate it.
No, buddy, this is great. I'm so happy that you guys are doing this and growing the game. And I'm happy that the league is taking steps in the right direction to make, you know, you and your audience more part of it. Cause I think that it's something that had to be done. And I couldn't be happier that the game is becoming more inclusive. So keep doing your guys' thing. This is great. Anything we can do to help you guys out, let us know. I'll mention that I came on, and when this comes out, I'll tweet all the links out and get you guys the promotion you deserve.
Appreciate you, man. For people out there that are getting introduced to the Biz Nasty, let them know how they can find you on social media.
Biz Nasty 2.0 is my Twitter account, and that's for the reasons. Remember when I talked about how crazy it was early on and when I first hopped on, we had to delete the first one. So I rebooted as 2.0 and cleaned up my act a little bit. And on Instagram, it's Biz Nasty. And then it's of course the Spit and Chicklets podcast. And we've had Akil on. I don't know what episode exactly, but you know, we're just trying to grow the game like you boys.
Yeah, baby. That's how we got to get down. That's all together now. That's what we say in the hip hop community. All together now, you know?
Love it.
And we'll have to send you out some Zale stuff.
I'll get you guys up.
Geared up.
That's Akil. That's why a guy like Nas is the perfect guy to look up to, because I believe he owns a decent amount of his own music, but he's, you know, off of the rap, he's made a name for himself as far as commercial real estate, investing in property. And like, he's just like, he's a G, man. It's like all like Jay-Z, same thing. All these guys have built empires, and it's awesome to see.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Thank you, Riz. You're the man. We appreciate this a lot.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome. Thank you. Definitely going to try that. Thanks, Elijah. Pink Whitney and Club Soda.
Hey, I'll see you at I'll see you at Boots and Hearts next summer, buddy.
I'll see you there.
Don't be shy.
See
all
you guys. Right, thanks, Biz.
Dope. That was Biz Nasty from the infamous Spit and Chicklets podcast. That was huge, boys. That was a great interview, man. I think that, you know, Biz is a good guy. And I think the lesson we can come out of this is that if we put our minds to it, you know, we can make this podcast a really special one and just make it very diverse. And at the end of the game, you know, help it grow. Any last words, boys?
No, just they started the exact same way we started. And if you look at how big they are now, it's definitely something that is achievable. And like Biz was saying, is if you don't be afraid to fall and get your face dirty in the mud, we just got to keep rolling with it, putting in our effort and see how far we could take this.
I kind of like find it weird how, you know, he's so articulate and like what he says is actually pretty insightful and it makes sense. And it just reminds me of the fact that Elijah and I haven't done our push-up challenge yet because I'm just waiting to beat him. So it's just, it all brings it, you know, back together. And yeah.
Push-up challenge coming soon. So make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week. Keep it locked each and every Wednesday. The Soul on Ice, the podcast. Bong, bong.
And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need ya, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah, soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice.
You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Cheese a dozen, fussing, fighting with myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power. Statistic of my weakness, shadow boxing with Tyson. I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table, it's time for lunch. Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie, progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They soul the show and know the, they live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali, he changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee, it's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need ya, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice.
Let's dedicate this one to Jade and Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinto. Or maybe you prefer that Benz, why? That big truck, I don't give a f**k. Only really want a house where they get by. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense, it's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the pass from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. We young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need ya, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.